de Global Latin Factor Podcast.
Welcome, welcome you and all to another episode of the Global Latin Factor Podcast, where we talk about Latino everything. Today, we have a very special gentleman in the house because he is like pretty much the embodiment. If you wanted anybody to represent the elements of hip hop, this would be the man right here. We have a recording artist, musician, graffiti artist, muralist, over 25 years experience, executive producer, former B-boy, or I don't know if he's still active B-boy. Again, once again, he truly embodies what it meant as like the core of the hip hop elements. He's one of the ones. We have Oxygen, aka Luisito, aka Louis the Monster, aka LTG, Louis the Great.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay,
I do a quick work, bro. How you doing today?
Good, good.
I told you you have to wear all that, bro. You're protected here.
It's my man purse.
We're on safe.
I keep
my that one doesn't wallet. Look much of a purse. It looks.
That's why I got it, because it don't look.
I don't think nobody's gonna get close to
you. Yeah, people when they see me like, damn, you a bodyguard or something.
I thought
like,
it was a vest too.
It's just my man purse, man. Shit. My medicine in
I
here.
See. But I don't know about the target, bro. You might want to take that.
Oh, that little target.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
it's
a honey thing. See, it comes on.
Look at that.
But it's just cool.
Fancy. Welcome to the podcast. Appreciate you being here, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, man.
Appreciate it. All right, we're going to do what we call Preguntas al Chile.
Yes.
So right now we're playing some graphics. If you have not subscribed to the YouTube, I don't know what you're waiting for. Subscribe, leave us a comment, like. If you're on audio only, check out the YouTube also. We have you, so you can look at us. I don't know if you like the visual or not. You can still hear the audio. All right, here we go. ¿Está listo?
Mm-hmm.
You ready? They're going to be tough, bro. Hope you're ready. ¿Tacos o tortas?
Ooh, tortas.
Corn tortilla, flour tortilla.
Flour.
Gorditas o sopes?
Gorditas.
Mexican Coca o Jarrito?
Mexican Coca.
Agua de horchata, Jamaica o Tamarindo?
I might have to go with Jamaica.
Jamaica,
yes.
Yeah, that's a good one. Salsa verde, salsa roja?
Salsa verde.
Menudo pozole?
Depending on the hangover, but I'm going to go with menudo.
Menudo. Churros o flan?
Oh, churros.
Yes. Okay. Valentina, Tapatío, Cholula sauce.
Valentina.
You know the paletitas, the candy ones, they have the chile, the paletas de sandía, elote o mango?
Sandía.
Sandía. Uh-huh. And the conchitas, the breads, corn, the brown, the white ones, or the pink ones?
The pink one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear the word Latino, what is the first thing that comes to mind to you?
Latin America.
Latin America?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And do you care if anybody calls you Latina? Do you identify as Latino?
Well, I figure society already labeled us as Latinos. I mean, I'm not. That's when they ask me, I'm like, I'm a Latino. Yeah, I am. I know people sometimes they're like, oh, don't say that you're Latino.
Right.
It's a whole different thing. They try to get deep into that. I mean,
right.
That's what I'm being labeled as, so that's what I am. I
guess. Right, that's true. Okay, so Oxygen is your name, for your muralist or tagger name, right?
Yeah, graffiti name.
Did you have a B-boy name?
Yeah, my cousin, he gave me the name for B-boy logo because I was always drawing.
B-boy logo?
Yeah.
That was your B-boy name?
Yeah, B-boy logo, because I was always drawing, making logos, making the signs. So
right.
He was like, hey, that's logo. And it stuck with me ever since.
B-boy logo.
Yeah.
Dope. What about Oxygen? Where did you get that
Oxygen
from?
Was...
That's your tagger name.
Yeah, when I started doing graffiti, I was trying to pick a hard name and something that nobody had.
Uh-huh.
And Oxygen has some very complicated letters, especially the X and the Y's, the G's, the E's. All those letters, when it comes down to graffiti, if you're deep into graffiti, you're into lettering. It's all about lettering, the style of letters that you can put together, how you put them on. And that's what I liked about it. It was a challenge. So that's why I was like, Oxygen, I like that. So
yeah.
we went with it. It was actually, I believe it was my friend Michael from in high school that he told me, like, why don't you write Oxygen? He's like, that's a hard name. The letters are hard. I'm like, you know what? Like, let me try it. I started just drawing, and it was hard at the beginning. So that's what made me want to just keep writing that name. And Right. Nobody, I still haven't heard anybody in the graffiti scene that his name was Oxygen. I seen some guy on Facebook not too long ago. I want to say about a month and a half ago.
Yeah. But you were doing way back in the days.
Yeah,
right?
I've been having that name since like, I want to say 93, 94.
So about 28 years or so?
Yeah.
27 years?
It's been a good minute now. Yeah.
Okay. What about your artist name?
Louis the Great. Louis the Great. That one, I came up with that name. It's actually, it has my initials in it. The L, Louis. The G for Guerrero. Mm-hmm. And the Great is just like, I came up with it because on numerology, when you used to have like pagers and all that
stuff.
The set number 7, you used it as a set, like as a T or as an L, depending on what number it is. And my birthday month is in July, the 7th. So that's, everything came together like that. Louis the Great, like that was just the way that I put that together. I was watching the History Channel. I like all that stuff, that Greek mythology and kings and all that stuff, like the old Renaissance stuff. So
like Alexander the Great and all that stuff.
I was watching a documentary like that, and I'm like, man, I like those. I want a name like that. I don't want to be a little or anything like that. I just want something different. Yeah, I want something different. So it was just pretty much my name with my initials. So
that's dope.
I might have to rock that name, because to have something that says Great, you got to come with it.
Yeah, you do. I mean, people are expecting
it.
Yeah,
so it's a challenge. It's not like... like, oh yeah, it's just Louis the Great. But what are you great at? Like, shit, a lot of things.
You are, because again, you cover, like, a lot of people don't understand. Anytime they think hip hop, they only think of one element, which is the rappers or the MCing. But there's more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the DJing, which I don't know if you did or not.
I did. You got into it. I was into it. That's the only element that I haven't really covered that I can say that I'm a DJ. I can mix. I used to do a couple of cuts, like beat juggling and stuff. But that was when I was practicing with one of my friends, Rocky. Yeah, he used to go by DJ Squirt back in high school, North Dallas High School. He was ahead of his times. Like, he was a battle DJ. Like, if you can say like some Mixmaster Mike type of stuff back in the days. So that's the level that he was on. And when he used to practice, I used to go with him, just be on the turntable, like, hey, get on this side, stuff, make a beat right here. So I would just get in there with him. I was just making beat. I don't know what I was doing. He would just show me. I was like, okay, cool. I was just making beat.
Did he give you a name for a DJ name?
Nah, because he never came to that, because to me, like, I wasn't taking it serious. I didn't buy turntables.
Yeah.
I was just around it because I've always liked music since little. And mixing, it was just like, I guess from the element, the same element, the battle elements. Yeah. That's what drives me into everything that I do. That challenge myself to test. From the breakdance, since breakdancing, I was like, man, that's dope. I want to learn how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I never took my time to really just study that craft, that element, that art form, because it's an art form to me.
So you don't think you did like enough b-boying? Because I think you did, no? Because you were
b-boying. Yeah, we did. From b-boying, we did a lot of damage.
So real quickly, so you were a part of one of the historical b-boy crews here in Dallas, which is the United B-Boys, of Dallas chapter, the original b-boys, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So yeah. That craft, you were part of it. Tell me, how did you get into b-boying first of all? Of course, you do love hip-hop.
Yeah, from the same thing. from the same crowd that we were hanging out with. Our friends, Mikel and Joseph, there were some Cuban guys that we met. We used to know these guys from back in the days, from North Dallas High School, crew named Ilso Crew. They were like dope ass MCs, like hip hop stuff, like hardcore hip hop. And in school, they used to have cyphers. So that attracted us. Well, it attracted me to like the whole hip hop environment. When I was here, I was like 10, 11. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to speak English. Mm-hmm. So trying to find new hobbies for me to entertain myself, like that's what I was doing. So those things were there for me. We used to go to quinceañeras. We used to be at the Gaston Bazaar a lot.
That's where y'all were practicing?
That's where we were practicing. That's with where, that's where, yeah, that's where everything started, at the Gaston Bazaar, at the quinceañeras. Because they used to have quinceañeras there, and we used to go just run around on the whole bazaar. First, we were just rollerblading before we started, like, breakdancing. Mm-hmm. We were just rollerblading, doing, like, stunts, all kinds of crazy stuff. And then that's when breakdancing came around. We're like, man, I like that. Since Mexico, I was, like, always just doing, like, little V-kicks, the warm knee spins and all that stuff. But I never knew what it was.
You just did
I was just doing it because I was seeing it on TV.
Right.
When I got here, that's when we started finding out about, like, what b-boying is, or footwork, and you gotta have up rocks and this and power moves. But I was more attracted to power moves. To me, footwork and style, it was just like, oh, I mean, it's just more dancing. But it comes together at the end. Mm-hmm. Everything, you have to be able to do everything.
You like, I gotta set it up.
Yeah, you have to set it up, from the dancing to the footwork to the power moves. You got to make everything flow together. Like, if you're just dancing, having fun, just feeling the music, you'll see it. Once you've done it for a long time, you're going to notice when somebody is just beginning, somebody is just, like, starting. And I guess that's why I'm so critical with things like that. I know the difficulty and what it takes to do, to come up with new moves. Because when we used to practice, like, if it was a sport. Yeah. We used to have weight vests, leg weights, roller skates. Roller skates. We used to use roller skates because they were heavier than rollerblades. Rollerblades, they were plastic. So we used to use that. We used to use heavy boots because what that will do, that will stretch out your legs. And then it gives you more weight when you're doing your power moves. So when you take them off, you get used to being a lot heavier.
Piccolo training type of
That's what we call it, like hyperbolic chamber type of training, because we will have like sweats, like different type of suits on top of it.
And it makes sense when you take it out, you're going to feel lighter.
You will feel lighter. And it was the same thing. Crazy. So that's what we're like. And when if you see some of the battles, like I will have like the thing saying Vegeta, like, because I would feel like that I was training like Vegeta. Yeah. Like it was never on AC, it was always on like concrete, like on concrete. We used to practice on concrete, barefooted. Ouch. So we'll be able to learn how to pick our feet off the floor. That we won't scrape, because we were very critical on scraping.
And you'll develop
the
calluses too.
Yes. And we will practice on concrete or grass just because we wanted to be battle ready. Like our mentality was like, hey, we're going to go smoke everybody. So it doesn't matter where we see them, where we at, we're going to battle them right there. So we're going to have to be ready for any type of surface, any type of floor. Damn. That was our mentality. Yeah, we were like little killing machines and stuff. Like,
but with the dancing.
Yeah, with the dancing. That's cool. So that's what kept us from doing a lot of stupid stuff back then too.
Yeah, because back in the 90s, there was all kinds of crazy stuff. Gangs and all.
Yeah,
even here in Dallas.
He kept us a lot from doing a lot of stuff. Cause we were just dancing, like all the gang members. We knew all the gang members and stuff, but they didn't mess with us. Cause they were like, man, them kids are dancing. Leave them alone and touch them and stuff. So it was always like that since a younger age. So he helped us a lot stay out of trouble, kind of like the cool kids, troublemakers too, because shit.
So when you got here from Mexico, was it Monterrey?
Monterrey.
Monterrey. You got here to Dallas and you stayed here in the Dallas area?
Dallas area. That's dope.
Okay, so y'all brought something to Dallas as the B-Boys, which was the, was it the first aerial attack or something
the
like that?
The Air Trax.
Air Trax, what is
that? Air Trax is, which, or they call them the Air Flare.
Air Flare.
They, there's been a debate of if it was Ivan, Jazzy J, or there was another guy from Brazil, and that they were like the first pioneers who did the first air flare. He was like around 95 mm-hmm. when the first one came out and that people seen it. And it was just a transaction to where you just open both of your arms and your legs are up in the air and you're just spinning. Like your legs are spinning up in the air. Mm-hmm. It's a whole rotation and you just skip through it and you catch yourself again. When we first started doing them, we used to do them sideways like this. Our legs were like almost close to the floor. Those mm-hmm. were harder. Mm-hmm. Now the way they're doing, like the gymnasts, they do them a lot higher. They're more bouncy. It's a lot easier for those. So that move came in around 95, 96. And apparently in Cali, they were pushing and pressing to try to get two of them. To try to get two continuously back to back. 96 came, 97 came. They still, nobody was still able to do two of them back to back.
Right.
On 97, us from Dallas, the Dallas chapter, that's when we went to Houston mm-hmm. for an event. Because that was at the time when we were kind of like at our peaks, just going out of state.
So you were competing at the time. Y'all were like a formal crew and y'all were competing across the country.
We were like 12, 13 years old, 14 year olds traveling out of state to every different state just to go find an event, to go find the dopest breakers, to go battle them.
That's it.
That's it.
It wasn't like an actual setup event?
And sometimes it wasn't. A lot of times we would just travel just to go see who was the best dancer.
Yeah, we're asking around, who's the ones?
Just to go smoke them. That was it. Like our mentality like, we're going to go beat everybody. We're going to be the best. So that was our mentality. We started traveling all around state, Oklahoma, Chicago, all them places. But we started going to Austin a lot. We heard about Houston. So we go to Houston for an event. And we're driving. And we hear on the radio, because it was real big back then. So we hear it on the radio that there was a breakdancing event. And they said, United B-Boys are in the house. We all looked at each other in the car. We're like, United B-Boys, how do they know we're here? Like, I don't know. Like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. So we're all excited and stuff. We're like, yeah, we're going to go. They already know we're here. But sometimes they used to put us on flyers.
Yeah, they know.
And we didn't know just so people will show up. Because we were, at the time, we were making a pretty good, decent amount of noise on the breakdancing scene.
Gotcha.
So all these raves and party, people who throw parties, they used to put our name, United B-Boys, on the flyer. Special guest, United B-Boys. So when we go to any other event, they would just let us in for free. We never really had to pay for a lot of events that they would put our name on the flyer.
Right.
And back then, that's when there was a lot of raves. There was a lot of raves going on.
Yeah.
So we were going to all of them, like, 14, 15-year-old bro, just going in, big warehouse, big parties, all kinds of stuff going on just to go breakdance there. So we were doing all that. When we go to Houston, we find out, hey, the scene had a B-Boys up here. And here comes Nightcrawler walking towards us. Like, man, what's up with this guy? Like, yeah, you not a B-Boys? Like, yeah, what's up? Like, hey, we not a B-Boys too. Like, oh, shit. Like,
and where they're from?
Houston.
They're from Houston.
So there was already a United B-Boys in Houston.
So who was first?
Apparently, it might have been Houston.
Uh-huh.
Because they started, like, on 92.
Okay.
We didn't know this. In Dallas, we didn't start until, like, 95, 96 with the name of United B-Boys.
The actual name.
Yeah. And we didn't know this. So we're like, man, like, come on with it. Let's go. The event wasn't even open yet. The rec center wasn't even open yet.
Are you serious?
It wasn't even open. So we're like, so where do you want to battle? Right here, let's go to the basketball court. And it was one of them basketball courts that had like little grits and stuff like that. Concrete.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, let's go. Come on. To us, it was like, we've been ready for that. So we start battling. Boom, boom. We start getting a circle outside the event. They're like, what the hell's going on? We're still just going at it. Boom, boom, boom. And we just keep looking at each other after we keep going at it. And like, man, like, in our mind, they're like, man, the fuckers are good. And then I see him talking to the other guy. We're like, man, we just keep going and going. Like 30 minutes go by and we're still going at it. We're like, man, finally Nightcrawler gets up. We're like, say, man, y'all are good. Like, right, yeah, right, like, y'all are good too. Yeah, like, say, man, like, why don't we just get together? Like, why don't we just get together and start a chapter, a Dallas chapter and a Houston chapter? I'm like, yeah, come on, let's do it.
That's dope.
So at that time, it was, we didn't know what we were doing. We were kind of like starting a little super crew. Because the way that we used to pick members to get in United B-Boys is like, you had to be like a one-man crew. Like, try to battle a whole crew by yourself and you better win. If not, you wasn't in it.
That was like your initiation time?
Yeah, that was like, you better be that good. Why? Because we set that high bar for ourselves.
Right.
That if we're going to be in it, we're going to have to be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And our crew, we didn't really have a leader. It was just all of us will make the rule. Like, we'll make like a standard to where you have to get new moves every week. Because we were battling every weekend back then. Every weekend we were battling. So you had to get new moves every week. And we couldn't see you doing the same set you did the week before because it was
like, so you had like a week to get something else going?
Damn. Yeah. So, because that's what I'm telling you, we were testing our, when I tell you that we were practicing, we were training like if it was a sport, like an actual sport. And I guess that's why we got good so fast. Because when we went to Houston, that's when we picked up the air flares. I didn't have them. Nightcrawler already had an air flare. He was doing already off the top and the elbows and like a butterfly twist and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, man, what are those? Like, we didn't know. We were just like, man, them guys were just twisting in the air.
Yeah.
That was our description to an air flare when we came back to Dallas. We tell George, like, man, they were twisting. They were just like turning upside down like a flare. But they were just like flying. Yeah. Like, they would let go. Because it looked like you were flying at first.
For a little bit.
Because back then, like, your body was not supposed to be doing all those kinds of things. It was just not physically possible yet. So we're like, what are those?
It wasn't possible because y'all haven't seen it until y'all saw it in Houston.
Yeah. And this is already like 96.
Yeah.
So there has already been a whole year from California, them already trying to get to reach two. Still couldn't get it. When we went to Houston, we picked them up. It was like around spring break of 97, maybe. By the summer of 97, we already had air tracks here in Dallas. So we brought air tracks from Houston to Dallas.
How many?
We was just one.
What's one?
It was just one. Towards the end of 97, that's when I was already attempting to go to two. Still, at the time, we didn't know. We weren't even thinking of going to two. It was actually an accident the way that I went to two. Because I was doing a flare aerial to like a, I wanted to go to like a halo. So in my head, it was like, I have to go up high. Because if I don't, I'm going to land straight to my head. I'm just going straight to my head. Face first. It's like you're twisting up in the air and you just, So I was just like, man, I got to go high. So I was practicing. Boom. Started getting higher and higher. And my friend Johnny is like, man, how come you don't try too? I'm like, for real? They're like, yeah, I was just one of those when they would tell me, hey, try this. Nah, that's not even possible. I would be the guy that would be like, nah, watch, I'm going to do it. So that was his way of telling me, man, you can't do two. Well, yeah, I can watch. Boom, I tried it. The first time that I tried it, it felt a little weird because it's all new. Like you're not supposed to be twisting like that. When I landed, I was like, whoa. I looked at him and was like, man, you almost did it. You almost did it. Do it again. So I tried it again. Boom, I did it. He's like, oh, you did too. You did too. I'm like, damn, like, did it look good? Because we didn't have cameras. Yeah, but we're cameras 14, 10, 14. Yeah. We're poor.
Yeah.
So we don't have cameras. It wasn't like back then that you got a phone.
Phone carrying around everywhere.
Yeah. And we weren't even thinking about like
trying to document that stuff. Document it. Yeah.
To us, we were just kids trying to get the move first before somebody else
and
does
beat
it.
The other crew.
And beat the other crew. Like make it hard for them to reach up. Because after I got them two air tracks, I tried to do another combo to do it into something else just in case they did it.
Right.
So it was just those like battle moves that we were like, we're going to set them up. So if they do this, we got this.
We got another one.
And if they do this, we got something that will top that. So we were like that at that time. And it was at it was actually a Kane O'N event. It was a teen batch. They used to do them back then on skating rinks. On Sundays. When people used to get out of school and all that stuff. So on that one, it was a team bash at the Magic Skate Land. And they were passing it on the radio. DJ Reeve was one of the DJs there that day. And DJ Hollywood, rest in peace. He was one of the DJs there that night too. So we started battling. We were battling in Xano Rock. Nightcrawler was here at the moment. We didn't let them battle in with us because we were having troubles with crews from Dallas, not just Dallas, but Houston, that they were saying that it wasn't fair because it was two crews battling against one crew. Like, it's just one crew. But
that just so happened to be from different cities.
We had different cities, and all of us were like 20, 30 of us. That had power. Like, you, when they saw it, they knew it was trouble. Here goes them guys. Like, man, it ain't gonna be an easy win. And the thing about that, we lost a lot of them big events because of politics.
Really?
Now that we're getting older, and as we go back and see everything, and see how everything is being now, we're like, we're like, we didn't lose, because every time we would lose, we would still go to the circle and battle them. And we will beat them at the end. And that's why United B-Boys never really, they knew, like, if these guys don't win on a battle, you're going to get a battle outside.
Yeah, that's simple. Dope. And then the fact that y'all were part also the that crew, the We From Dallas documentary, A Salute to Dallas Hip Hop.
Yes.
That's badass. Mm-hmm. That's dope. Okay, so when you started, so you still were tagging at that time also, right?
Yeah,
you
were I started everything at the same time, actually. Everything.
Even the music?
Yeah.
Were writing, or
with,
you already
with
recording?
The music, I was just writing.
Okay.
Since little, I always wanted to learn how to, it was weird because I always wanted to learn how to write a song.
Write a
song, not just rap. Or like, I wanted to learn how to write a song. I wanted to learn the concept of writing different genres of music. Because when I was little, I started noticing, okay, so I didn't know what was a hook, what was bridge, what was a verse, none of that. And cumbias is a different format when you write a cumbia.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to write the hook, a bridge, then a little bit of a verse. A verse can be only like six bars, and then comes down to another hook. As of in rap, it's just hook, 12 bars, 16 bars. It's different formats of writing.
Right.
So then little, I was always like, man, how do you write a format for this song? How do you write it for this song? I don't know why I was thinking that. I was just like in the back of my dad's van, like, man, I want to learn how to write.
So how was you writing? You were just writing poetry at that time?
Yeah, it was just poetry and poems. That was it.
You remember your first poem by any chance?
No.
Oh, a little bit of it?
No, no, I don't.
It's been so long.
It's been so long, so much writing. I got piles of books. Or just writes, verses.
Have you made any of those into a songs or dug in there and see if maybe something's potentially something?
Yeah, I still go back. Whenever I want to come up with something different, I go back to my own notes and I look at stuff and I just put everything together different ways.
Kind of like reference maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I do that a lot. Yeah, so I save a lot of my notes because sometimes I just be driving and I rap something, I sing something, I record it, go back, write it on my paper, and I just save it.
It's a great idea.
It's
sometimes those thoughts don't come back.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah. It's I caught myself doing not only that, but the writing comes more natural like that. Like you don't force it, and it gives you different topics to write. Because depending on how you're feeling at the moment when you're singing or writing, that you're like, oh. You might catch a feeling there. Mm-hmm. And even when you record it here and you write it, you may not hit it the same way. So I try to record myself to see.
What were you feeling like? What was the delivery?
Yeah,
like?
The delivery. Because I'm very big on delivery. Because there's some artists that you can hear them where they're just reading the stuff.
Yeah.
You see, you can.
Are you still writing and still, or do you sometimes punch in?
I've been doing a little bit of both now.
Yeah.
What I did a lot with this album that I dropped, I went back after memorizing the songs. I went back and then I punched in differently on different things that I was feeling that day. Because some of them songs are like 2-3 year old. So I went back and put different things on it, punching in. I would just be in the studio just singing. And then if I feel like something else is going to be there, I would just say it. Even though I know the song, I wrote different lyrics to it.
I got you.
If I'm feeling something different at the moment, now that I know my song and that I know it's going to be better and sound better, I set the other things. And the music changed a lot. It's different feelings, different vibes. Like you can hear it on the verses, like, because that's what people tell me. They're like, man, your voice, you can make me feel a lot of different things with your voice, like your expressions, the way that you express yourself on your music is, you make me feel it. And that's what I'm very picky about.
Okay, we'll talk about the project in just a second. So when did you make the transition of actually going and starting to actually record a song? And then were you with a different crew at the time, like rapping, or was it just always yourself?
It was always in myself. I started recording with a little cassette player. I would push play on the instrumental on one.
Yeah.
Hook up the mic on the other one with the headphones, and I would push record. And I would just start recording myself on tape, on tape players
tapes.
Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, tapes.
Just to practice.
This is a tape, people. Uh-huh.
A tape, like a cassette.
Not a CD. That was the one before. So
yeah. Yeah, it was on one of those. And or the little recorders that were back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, yeah.
The voice recorders.
Like a regular voice recorder.
I would just play a beat.
The one that the Fed be using to try to catch
No, I would just play a beat and then just rap on it. Make my tapes like that. That's how it started.
Oh, okay.
So you
record the audio, the song, and your lyrics.
Everything was just being recorded right there, like on the spot, like that.
Are you serious?
It was just like, just recording it like that. And I would just have my tapes, just listening to it. I'm like, man, I don't like how it sounded like that. Let me go back and redo it again. But I was always like that. Like, I don't like how it sounds. I think I can hit it better. And I will go back and re-record it. That was one thing that I've always did. And it wasn't until like 2006 when I went to Mexico. Well, I didn't go. I was there for a little trip, but it was I was working in Marcafon over there in Monterrey, and that's when I met Rinox.
Yeah,
because he was working there in Marcafon. So he was asking me like, "Hey, you do music?" I'm like, "Yeah."
How do you figure you were doing music?
Because when I was in Monterrey, I was like one of the few ones speaking English over there. And in Marcafon, they were just, we was working for AT&T at the time. No, it wasn't AT&T, it was Spring. We were doing the telemarketing, collecting bills and all that stuff. So he was working there because he knew English too. And that's how we met. Mm. We were doing like some training. And we're like, hey, we just started talking right there. And like, and he told me like, hey, I do music here. Check my music. I'm like, oh, you do? I'm like, I do too, but I never record it. Like, you never record it? Like, yeah. Like, man. So that's when he showed me his album of, it was Repertorio de Rimas. Mm-hmm. That was my
rhyme repertoire.
Yeah, it was the album that he gave me. It was him, Pollo, Rax, and I forgot the name of the other guy. El Brujo. He was in there too on a couple of them tracks, and that was my introduction to like Spanish rap.
Spanish rap.
Yes.
Because you were used to, were you doing English?
Yeah, he was all a lot of it English. Nice. And I would write it in Spanglish because it was just like, how would you just talk to people like, because my Spanish and English were mucho. So I would just write rhymes like that, like Spanglish stuff. And like, it was always like that. So when I went to Mexico, I was doing the Spanglish stuff and they were like, man, like your stuff is different. He like, but learn the Spanish.
Yeah.
You're like, you're Mexican, so you got to learn your Spanish. He started giving me references. Like, he's like, ten escucha este vato. Like, it was a tanque. This was before Jera Mexa Mafia came.
Before, ¿cómo se llama este? Clan?
Yeah. Before all of them.
Before Secan.
This was when Babo and them were barely coming out. Like that.
That's crazy.
And Rinox is actually the guy that pretty much discovered Jera Mexa Mafia. Hmm. At the studio that I went to go record with Rinox at his house, little house studio on the computer.
Yeah.
Jera Mexa Mafia recorded there at the same studio that I recorded.
Really?
He told me the other time, like, nah, like, yeah, bro, like, recorded it. And like, a lot of raperos from Mexico, they know Rinox. Rinox is a
OG.
He's I used to call him like the Mexican Biggie because his flow and his delivery was just like, man. Like to me, he's one of the top writers. He writes a lot for a lot of writers from up there.
Oh, I got you.
He's a ghostwriter for a lot of them writers over there. Dang. A lot of stuff that you hear, that's him behind it.
Dope.
So, but yeah, he's the guy that pretty much not show me, but gave me the, because when I was recording there, here in the States, they're so used to having like, they call it the swag, like just more mellow, more laid back. Mm-hmm. In Mexico is more like, he told me, de lo con huevos, güey, like when you rap.
Like you mean it.
Yeah, rap like you mean it. Say it from your stomachs. Put some in it.
Yeah.
So I started recording like that over there. It changed me up completely. So I took his advice, started doing it. We put a couple of tracks together. Little EP, 8-track EP. Mm-hmm. I had the mentality from here. So I went to the Pulga, bought a whole bunch of CDs. Pressed them together, and I went out just giving them away in Mexico.
You recorded it? Okay.
We recorded a song over there at the studio at Rinox's house. Mm-hmm. La computadora, a little home computer, telemarketing microphone, but he knew how to edit the stuff and make it sound good.
Nice.
So we put it together, put a little 8-track EP, went out.
You know what the name of it was?
It was, we didn't have a name for the EP, but we were trying to start this record label called Red Eye Production. Because we were always smoking.
Red Eye?
Because we were always smoking. So we were like Red Eye Production. So we were putting the music out. We tried something that we tried us. We put it out. This was 06.
How did it feel to record your very first song that you can heard you the quality? I know you heard you before, but the quality was a little different.
Yeah, it was a little different.
How did it feel to you to hear it?
It still, when I hear it, I'm like, man, I'm like, it still sounds like, I'm not going to say like, oh, I sound like crap or anything, because it was like actually my first recording. Mm-hmm. So when I hear it, he knew what, he guided me well.
Yeah.
So it don't sound bad. Like when I hear it, I'm like, man, this tracks, if we were to master them the right way, mm-hmm. they could have probably did something, because they were playing it at clubs over there in Mexico.
You ain't never thought to remake some of those songs here? Or even remaster or revamp?
We thought about it, but we're trying to put that energy into new projects now.
I got you.
I've been working with him right now, mm-hmm. Working with a couple of artists from Mexico, from Monterrey. So that's what we're doing right now. We're working on a couple of things.
Okay.
With that.
We'll talk about that too here in a second. All right. So, and then you finally made it back to the States.
Yeah.
And then how did you start getting involved in doing?
When I came back to the States, it was just like an addiction. Once you record the first time and you hear your voice, you're like, man, that's me. Mm-hmm. And like, not only, but I've been hooked on that since a younger age. So when I did it, I'm like, I want to keep doing this. Like, I want to keep writing my thing. I guess I like writing. Mm-hmm. I like writing and recording, being in the studio recording. Like, oh, no, take this out. Turn this up. Put this instrument down. Take this out of here. Take these vocals away from here. Put them over here. Like, how would it sound if we do this? Let's change this up. I like doing all that, mm-hmm. like a little puzzle. I like doing that. That's what I like about making music.
That's where you like the logos.
Yeah. it's just like, it's, I guess, a creative way. I look at it as like the lyrics, the instruments, everything is just like my paint. Mm. And like the track is just my canvas.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's just up to me to start painting everything and create my masterpiece. So that's how I look at every track that I make, like words, instruments, everything is just like a painting to me. Right. So I look at it like that, like art is just, like to me, it's just art. There's a form that I use when we make music. Sometimes we even re-record the same track three different ways. Because it's like I'm always with the, what if it sounds better like this? What if it, I'm never really satisfied.
How do you make the final decision on a cut for a project then?
You just know. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes when you play it, we bump it loud and we turn it up. I always close my eyes. I like to sit in the middle of the mixing room on the sweet spot where the speakers are just projecting to you. Just mm-hmm. sit there and play it loud. If it gives me the chills and if it gives me that picture that I'm looking for, I know that it's good for that. If we don't, we put it out. We didn't put a lot of the tracks on this album, this new album that we dropped.
Was it a full album or was it an EP?
This is a full album.
Full album?
Yeah. It has 13 tracks.
13 tracks.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, and then you get back, but who do you start recording with or how do you go about doing that?
When I got back, I was recording with this guy named Mike Waller. He was making beats. When I was in Mexico, mm-hmm. he was sending me beats from here.
Hmm. How'd you meet him?
Facebook. He was a cousin from my friend Ralph that they used to be in Ilso from back in North Dallas High School. Mm-hmm. So he used to make beats. So that's how I linked up with him. When I got here, Mike started throwing shows at Tomcats in Deep Ellum. Mm-hmm. He used to do shows. So I used to just go there and just perform.
Mm-hmm. And that was, what year was that?
2007, yeah. The end of 2006, early 2007.
Okay,
that's when I started doing. When I got back, I started just doing shows. I started doing a lot of shows when I got back. Mm-hmm. It was a little weird because when I came back, I was already doing Spanish, Spanglish stuff, and it wasn't like I don't want to say it wasn't well accepted yet. It wasn't too popular. Mm-hmm. So it was a little weird, like at first.
Yeah.
This was before the Bad Bunnies and all that stuff came out. Yeah. And this was Spanish rap wasn't cool yet. It was just like, it was there. Yeah. But it wasn't well accepted yet.
Yeah, they got a big wave going.
Yeah.
They've been going for a little while.
Yeah.
Well, the Santa Fe clan, Secan, the Gema,
Gera Mexa Mafia.
Then there's all kinds of other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Dario, I think.
Dario's, yeah. Actually, Dario, we spoke to his, I don't know if it was his manager. I had gotten hooked up with one of them guys. We almost had a good deal with it, but it didn't come through.
Mm-hmm.
But my name's been getting thrown around when a couple of people were asking for writers, Spanish writers. Like, hey, talk to him. He's got some good work, stuff like that. But it's always, a lot of times they want to use you. A lot of them big labels, they want to use you.
Get yours.
Yeah, and it's not, at the end of the day, the numbers and everything, if it don't sound right with you, just do it yourself.
Yeah.
Just do it yourself. I mean,
they obviously know you have something.
Yeah.
They will.
And before I dropped the album, that's what had me confused a lot, because I was like, should I sell my material? Should I sell it to them? Or what can we do? We had a lot of questions like that.
I wouldn't let it go all the way, like straight up. I would always have maybe some royalties coming back to me, even if it's a small percentage.
Exactly.
Or ever.
And that's where we were on those. We're like, I don't. Like, if they're already interested on my work and they know the name, let's just go solo. Let's put all the chips on us and just try to do it.
Yeah, that's true. Again, they'll come back around.
Yeah,
but then your value will be more.
It's gonna be a lot.
Numbers will be shown.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, so when did you finally linked up with? Was it the only crew that you had was Blue and Silver, or was it somebody else before?
Before that, I was when I got back here, I was recording with Big Dog and Lalo from Stray Game. I started recording with them, and we were doing shows and stuff. A couple of things happened, street stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the label didn't go through it. We had a good sound too. We were getting played like a lot of strip joints, clubs. They were playing our tracks. But we wasn't taking it serious.
Mm.
It was just, we were more just like, it's just a plus. We're more busy trying to make money out on the streets. You're like, I need this money. That was it. The music was just like a hobby. It wasn't like, we're going to push it, get a mix and master.
So you started losing passion then at that time to creating it?
Yeah.
Not like it was
when I was in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I started getting more caught up trying to make money. And that took a lot of my mind away from the music. My music was different too. Then after that, that's when I started recording with HST, Honda Street Thugs from over there, Maple Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
We were recording there a lot too. Took a couple of tracks to Kano and they played them, but we never had our stuff mixed and mastered like correctly. My boy had a good ear, but it was just like a natural ear. It was never like that refined, like the stuff to where you can play your track with the Drake song or mm-hmm. one of them big artists and you won't notice the difference. And I think that's what kills a lot of artists here in Dallas. They don't have that sound, like the actual songs mix and master the right way.
Still?
Yeah. It's 2022 and come on, man. Like, mm-hmm. that's one thing that I'm big about. I guess me recording with Blue and Silver Studios, it got me real spoiled with that. D-Craze is like very picky. Like if he don't like something, he's gonna let you know. He ain't gonna sugarcoat it. Like he don't care about your feelings, or he's gonna let you know. Oh, that sounds like shit. You don't. Do it again.
That's funny.
And yeah, that's true. That's D-Craze.
But you need that honesty.
You need
though.
That. You yeah. need them people like that, bro.
You need that honesty.
You need them, because if you don't, yeah. I mean, you can hear a lot of tracks from artists from here that you're like,
he'd be happy to take your money and say, yeah, and set you up for failure.
Exactly. And he wasn't like that. So that was one thing that I liked about it. That's what I say. Like, he pushed me. He pushed my limits. He trained my vocals. When I first got with him, yeah, I had talent, but it was just like, wow, all over. It wasn't
raw. Too yeah. much.
Yeah, it
talent.
Was just, it was just like that.
Be refined. Yeah, like a diamond
did.
In the rough.
Yeah, he did, and that's what he did right there. Like he, between him, and that's when Double Dollar was around too. I started picking up my trap style from Double Dollar, like that trappish beat, yeah. like the da 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 da, like. Them little melodies like that, I started picking them up from Double Dollar, because that's what he was doing a lot.
Yeah, I like the love with the drugs.
Yeah, so exactly. So it's just like, and to me at that time, Double Dollar was like ahead of his times. Like his writing, his everything is just like, man, like this guy is just on some other type of stuff.
Right.
He was just, I learned a lot from them. From Double Dollar, D-Craze, that's where I got molded too.
Yeah.
The Spanish stuff, Rinox, is just like, hey, and he sends me stuff. Check this out. Listen to this. You don't say it like this. Do it like this. But then I got to think about it too. I'm here in the States.
Yeah.
Our Spanish is different because we got different cultures around us.
Yeah.
We got Salvadoreños, Puerto Ricans, Cubans. I picked up a lot of their
and it's
their
even
slang.
More different in California. Yes, too.
And now with people from Cali and New York being here, Latinos being here, we're picking up different type of Spanish, different type of slang. It's not the same as the slang from Mexico,
it's not.
At all. So they picked that up, and now the people in Mexico are trying to do that slang that we're using over here.
Yeah,
so
it only makes sense though, because people are going back and forth,
and so it's transitioning there. Yeah. So right now, Dallas is, if you think about it, it's going to be the sweet spot for Latinos.
I think who's like that still, and it's been like that, Houston, there's a bigger melting pot.
Houston. Like, everybody keep. And the funny thing right now, when you said that about Houston, Houston used to show me, they still show me a lot of love when I drop all my Spanish stuff over there.
Yeah. You see on your analytics, Houston be popping.
Houston is just... Houston and Dallas, Houston, Dallas, Arizona, Chicago.
You need to find a couple of promoters, hit the road, bro.
I do want to, but it's just going back to it again. I need to find the perfect fit on shows for my music now.
Yeah.
Because with my music, I don't want to be just going to like a rap concert. Where everybody's just rapping.
Not for the new project.
Not for the new and that, the new music, the new project, that's me. That's 5 years worth of work.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, on this, it was just like, I was just being me. Mm-hmm. That's me. The other stuff, we had to adjust it because back then, going back to Spanish wasn't well accepted.
Yeah.
So I had to write more English. My English is not great. My Spanish comes through. English is not my first language.
Right.
So my Spanish comes through, pronunciations and everything. It comes through. I hear it. That's what I mean. Like,
bro. English is not my first language.
Yeah. So it's just like, I feel like I was forcing it and I didn't feel comfortable. As of with Spanish, even when I sing in Spanish, my vocals, everything, my ranges are wider because I'm more comfortable with it.
Nice.
And so... It's with this new type of material, and I got a lot more like that. But it's just that's me. I have another album that's just all rap music that I was gonna drop it before this, but I feel like this album needed to be out.
All right, let's talk about that new project. So you have recently dropped a new project. Código de Ritmo?
Yes.
Okay, how'd you came up with the name Código de Ritmo?
I feel like with this album, I was trying to create a new sound. Like,
tell me about the sound, baby, because I get in a cumbia vibe mixed with a reggaeton vibe.
Uh-huh. It's I wanted to put everything on how I grew. I grew up listening to Los Angeles Azules, La Sonora Dinamita, Bronco, Elvis Crespo. We used to listen to a lot of merengue, salsa merengue. Mm-hmm. I grew up listening to all them grupos. So, and I'm from Monterrey. Cumbia has been in my blood since a little kid.
Since you were sleeping on the chair and your mom was still dancing.
So it's just one of those two where, and I've always been preaching that us because us Latinos don't really have a artist, like a Spanish artist that, well, back then we didn't really have a Spanish, like Mexican rapper. The closest thing was like SPM, Cypress Hill.
Here in the States, even
in Mexico. Because it wasn't until Santa Fe.
Santa Fe, there was Cartel de Santa,
and there was a couple of other guys, but they weren't huge. No,
they weren't like huge.
Cartel de Santa is the closest thing to being big. That's why everybody.
But not mainstream.
And here, we don't really have that either. We had little spots here and there. We have little things, but
I think, you know, who doesn't get a lot of credit and needs to get a lot more credit, and I know maybe because it's not like this street type of music, but Baby Bash, yeah, it's a platinum artist, and yes, it's Mexican descent, and he is a platinum artist. Whether you want to accept that he was a rapping type or not, he rapped.
Yeah.
And he was able to get a platinum record. He's like, to me, whether we want or not, if we're going based off of numbers, I mean, who else had hit platinum?
Bash, I mean, Playing Skills, but it was just for their production.
I'm saying, though, who other rapper has had a freaking platinum that there is, if you're going based off of numbers, right? Mm-hmm. Popularity-wise, you can say SPM.
Yeah.
Maybe so. As far as establishing Frost, Cypress Hill.
Frost was one of...
Lighter Shade of Brown.
Yeah, Lighter Shade of Brown.
All of them kind of help. But then, again, if you're really going based off of numbers, there's a lot of newer wave of rappers that are coming that I'm like, OT Mexican.
I like his stuff.
There's Peso. He has his own type. D-Baby.
Yeah, D-Baby.
He's hitting waves big time. Y'all got a little song going on. But what I'm saying is that there's new wave of rappers, that's great that they're heading that way. And I hope they do get platinum and put it. But I just saying, and it wasn't me that I heard it originally, but I always had it in the back of my mind. I think it was from Houston podcast, The Underground Radar with J-Bass and Mr. Never Die.
Yeah,
I heard him discuss that, and it's true.
Yeah, and I
always thought about him. Like, how come nobody talks about that guy? Because he's platinum. He's in the platinum artist, and he's Mexican. Because he made those rap, dancing type of stuff. He wasn't hood.
Pero lo enseña.
I don't think he's ever shied away from saying that he's like, no, I'm not Mexican.
But you see what I mean? It's like, because I went to Mexico Mexico is hard, bro. Like, that's one of the hardest crowds. Y te van a echar carrilla and everything. But once you get them and you get their support, you're going to have them forever. Now, that thing on that is like, if he was to go do shows over there, start catering to them, I bet you all that stuff will come up.
And then we get into the politics. I don't know. I'm just going based off the numbers as far as in the States.
Yeah, he's done that. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know if it was if he composed a couple of songs too for a couple of these female artists that are out now too. I don't know if he was doing some stuff for Becky G or stuff like that. That he was writing a couple of songs,
but she doesn't even get credit too for the reggaeton. And
yeah,
and she's Mexican American. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but still she's Mexican,
mm-hmm.
and she's representing. I know there's other reggaetoneras that are coming to them, Mexicanas.
Yeah,
but see, that's what we start even within our own culture.
Like, yeah, and that's what I mean. It's always been like that because of it, but I feel like Dallas is going to be the bridge to close, not just Dallas, Dallas and Houston.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the bridge to close all that gap between all those things. So like, oh, he's not Mexican, or this and that. Yeah. It's because it's going to be, Spanish rap is going to become kind of like the English culture.
Spanish is already here like that. Because they're filling out stadiums already coming from Mexico and doing shows here. That's crazy.
And the crazier part is that here in Dallas, we don't have a platform for Spanish music.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not on the radio. It's not an FM radio that's playing nothing but the rap Mexican.
Yeah, the rap Mexican. Like they will play reggaeton, cumbias and stuff like that, but like as a rap, like for Spanish rap.
It's not a dying thing, but radio is becoming like maybe more of a boomer type of thing they listen to, or a different kind of people.
I think radio is becoming more of a marketing tool for just to like go on that breakthrough.
I don't even know if that's it anymore. I think it's all in the internet now, to be honest.
Now it's Spotify. Now Spotify, YouTube. Really, Spotify has become the new radio station. Actually,
yeah, and then as far as going viral and getting a song known, TikTok.
It's a little bit different with TikTok though. I'm still trying to manage on how to work with that, but it's better just hiring somebody.
It is
that
because
work.
it's a
there's ways.
It's a younger type of people that know how to work it good to get them moving.
There's certain times that you gotta post, certain amount of times that you gotta post a day.
TikTok's another beast.
Yeah, it's a whole different thing. That is just way too much. I'm a creator. I'm just gonna create my music.
That's
paint.
True. They have firms and things like that work on that stuff, so you don't have to worry, and you can work on creating. So back to the código de ritmo. So the sound. Did I nail it right though?
The sound is a mixture of cumbia, reggaeton, and some salsa and merengue vibes.
All that in that.
Yeah, we put it all together like
that. And all the lyrics were in Spanish.
Yeah, all the lyrics
were in
Spanish.
And you said you wanted to do that on purpose because you felt like you were like being held back, but this is who you are as far as your native tongue, right?
Yeah.
This is what you've been holding out for.
Yeah,
that's
me. Like, it's, I've always wanted to make that type of music. Mm-hmm. I guess since little. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wanted to make people dance.
Yeah.
Like.
Oh, you got that.
It's
got the dancing vibe, bro.
If you think about it, like, a lot of the artists from here, they give you an album, a CD, and it's going to sound the same as the other guy that just gave you an album.
Yeah.
Same melodies, same vibes, same everything. I was getting tired of that. I don't even listen to rap music. I listen to opera in the car. Like, I just sit
classical music.
I just sit there and listen to that. I listen to different sounds of a lot of Spanish music, old cumbias, Angeles Azul. I still listen to all that. Rap, not too much. Whenever I want to see what's up and what's trending and what's new, I listen to it, but it's just not too much. I don't necessarily pay attention to like the rap lyrics. I pay attention more to the production,
right?
On
how they're
EQing the vocals, what type of instruments they're using, because that has a lot to do when you compose a song. There's different melodies, different frequencies, on instruments that register in people's minds and makes them hum or just
memorize it.
Yeah, it makes them memorize it. It's a lot easier to memorize it. So it's just things like that you got to keep in mind. And that's what I was trying to do with this album. I was just trying to make people dance. Something different. Something that you weren't even going to expect.
I like La Cama. Like and that. It's doing really good numbers.
Yeah, La Cama is that's a song that we did with Shade and Vega. She's been doing some music here right now. She's in the army. She won't be back until December. But
she's in the military?
Yeah, she won't be back until December. So we were trying to shoot a video for that, but it won't be until like after that. That's one of my favorite songs right there.
La Cama.
It has like that we're trying to do a little bit of that maná type of vibe with that beat. That maná, little reggae-ish type of vibes with it, more in the mellow type of laid back things.
I like the way it starts, and then you were talking about the melody as far as making memorable. As soon as you start the beat, you already kind of get it.
Yeah, like think. That's what I mean. Like a little reggae-ish, little like mellow.
She did
just
good.
Back.
Yeah, she did really
she
good.
Kills it.
Like, I was wondering who that was because I didn't see her name on it.
Yeah,
maybe Spotify didn't show, but I'm like, I wonder who this is.
Yeah, that's Shade and Vega. She trying to work with her again, doing a couple of more projects. I want to work with her. Do another song with her. Mandy's another one. She's got some good work. She's working with a producer from Monterrey.
Mandy, right?
Yeah. And her new work that she's got, like, it's a different sound. She's working with a different producer from Monterrey. So what he's bringing out, he's bringing the sounds that are up there right now. Mm-hmm. And it sounds different. So that's why I'm like, man. And it's a lot, as we were talking about earlier, it's a lot. There's a lack of Spanish female artists in the game, period.
Yeah.
You can probably name all of them with one hand.
There are Mexicanas?
Not just Mexicanas, just like Latinas, reggaetoneras or anything. Like just Becky G, Natty
Natasha. ¿Cómo se llama la otra? Rosalía.
Yeah, Rosalía.
And then there's a couple other ones that are like coming.
That's only like 5, 10.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so tell me about the project. Okay, the event. You had a release party, right? You had like a Katrina. You had tequila. You had a DJ. You had a bunch of guests. I didn't get an invite. Yeah. So I wasn't able to make it there.
It was on Facebook, man. Social
media. I didn't get
an
invite in person. I'm only like that nowadays. I only hit the streets if I get an invite person. If I don't get an invite, I'm going to be so paid right now.
Like, I'm not going.
If I ain't get a direct invite, I'm not going. Especially as I used to be his manager.
Yeah, I'm going to have to
for like
send
a short,
you
brief fine, moment.
Here you go. Come on.
I'm like, heck nah. No, I saw it, bro. No, but actually, I'd be usually I'd be like doing different stuff on the weekends. What day was it?
It was on...
Before I caught
the
lying.
The first one we did... It was on, what was it, Saturday, Sunday? Saturday?
See, the Saturday
first one
was
we did
busy.
It. Yeah, the first one we did, it was on a Saturday. Uh-huh. And the second one, the actual album release party, it was on a Sunday.
See, Sunday's so, for church, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, so we did it on a Sunday on the evening because it was, I think the next day was like Labor Day or something like that.
Oh, okay, it was Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, so I didn't want to interfere with some of the DJs or people that were going to be there too because they work. So I try to do it early, something quick. We did it at the Heights District.
Tell me about that place, because you did work there, right?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of work right now. The Heights District right now is like almost like my personal private gallery for my art, my murals right now.
Yeah. Who's that place?
The
for?
Owner is Rich Mendoza. He's the owner of Exports. Mm-hmm. They print a lot of... like gear, merchandise, jerseys, anything you can think of. You name it, they got it. Embroidery, everything. Big business he's got. He has a store right there in the Heights District in the front where they print a lot of local brands from here, from Dallas. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a little like a high-end urban type of vibe clothing. Everything in there is like nice. They stay with what's out right now.
Nice.
And that's how they started with that. They opened up that shop to sell the clothes. And then they started making different rooms in there. Started just painting each room different, gave them a different vibe. And
you done all the work in there?
Not all of it, mm-hmm. but almost.
They got like some kind of hallway that you did.
Yeah,
right?
the hallway that we did, it was a collaboration with the Dallas Epoxy guys. Mm-hmm. It was just a white hallway, and we did a galaxy theme with fluorescent lights, fluorescent paint. So whenever you put a black light on it, it's black light activated. So it looks like a whole different mural. We did it on the floor. The Dallas Epoxy guys that came, they did the floor, sanded down, came back. I did some of the highlights on the floor. Yeah. They came back, shot the epoxy on top of it. Then we blend it from the floor all the way to the walls.
That's a lot of work.
It was like we did it in like a week.
Dang, in a week. Just going back and forth and layers down and going back.
And we got it done. And after that, at first, I started doing the basketball court. It was just a simple two-tone fade. After that, that's when I went to the galaxy room. Mm. From the galaxy room, I started doing the God's room. From the God's room, I started doing the restrooms. From the restroom, I started doing the smiley face. So it just started going from there because they're like, man, what don't you know how to do? I'm like, I don't know. Whatever I don't know, I just figure it out.
Man, you were doing a lot. So you had a big old dark Katrina in there too, right?
Yes. The Katrina we took, it was from Anel. She's the one that's been making a lot of the Katrinas around town. Very talented. And I've been keeping up with her work for over a year and a half. Uh-huh. And I've always wanted to use that on my music because I'm very cultural with my stuff.
One of your songs like Katrina.
Yeah, one of my songs is like Katrina. Yeah. So when I seen her work, I was like, man, I need to have her doing my Katrinas for this song.
She looked crazy looking.
And we started linking up ever since. And I told her, hey, I seen her. She had a bull. And she was walking around the Pelon with that bull, the one that I took to my party. And I was like, man, I need that on my party. Like, why do you want that? It's different. Like, it's different showing the culture. This is who we are. Like, and it wasn't just much for me. It was just for the guests. I was just thinking more of the guests. Like, I want to give them a different type of show, something different.
Yeah.
That's why when I invited them, I was just showing off, like, my paintings, everything that I did right there.
Yeah.
My music. I just pretty much put everything that I do in one night.
You had the merch.
So yeah. And
did you break dance that day?
No.
You missed out,
no,
bro.
I didn't get to.
What the heck, man? You
I wouldn't
that
have
part.
Woke up the next.
At least a couple moves. That was a full flare, not even. Just, no. You know, maybe the worm.
I
this
can't
time.
Flare. I can still do other things. But
maybe
no flare.
The worm, maybe this time. Just something light
I might have to sneak it up in the next event.
And then you also had some tequila. Some
yeah,
kind of
it was a young. It was a I'm forgetting right now. Yankee tequila. It was Yankee tequila. Bandido Yankee tequila. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that helped me out with that, with all the drinks, everything that we had in there. Man, they came in. That tequila is real good. That's actually very, very smooth. It just came up on I think it was the Rolling Stones magazine.
Oh, really?
As one of the best tasting tequilas right now at the moment. That's from nice. Texas, and it's crafted by a female too.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, it's a female owned tequila. So
and you had a variety of guests.
Yes.
Except for me. I ain't make it there.
He ain't gonna let that one.
I'm gonna be petty today. No, I'm just kidding. But I saw J. Cruz.
Yeah, J. Homie. Yeah, J. Cruz showed up. It was that was a
Blue
big blessing right there. Yeah. Wes OG showed up.
DJ Scorpio.
Yeah, DJ Scorpio was playing right there.
Mandy
was there. Anita was there. Man, there was so many people walking in. A lot of them, it was just one of those like walking in and out. So there was a whole bunch of people just walking in and out that came and showed love. It was just a good turnout. I didn't want it to be something super huge, but it was just something so I can get some content.
Yeah.
And promote it. So that's what I did with it.
So for the next projects that you have coming up, is that the sound that we're going to be hearing from now on? Or is that just something that you wanted to really, really do? And then I know you're saying you're not too much listening to hip hop anymore. Or are you going to stick with that sound? Or
well, that sound is just something that's me. And that's like, that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, that's my sound.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've been wanting to put out for the longest. It's me. I can, like I'm saying, like I mixed a little bit of the rap still with that project, but it was more on the dancing. That's what I said, like more on the Angeles Azules, Sonora Santanera type of stuff.
Like a party vibe, trying to get people to dance type of vibes.
My goal with this album was just push play and rock the whole party.
Yeah. And then I was listening to the Spotify one after the other.
Yeah.
And it was just like...
And it's different vibes. It's different vibes. Yeah. I didn't want to put all the songs that sound the same back to back. I wanted to break it down.
You got the Katrina, you got the Mala, you got the Cama.
Yeah, all that.
Soy tu patrón.
Tu patrón. Gozar. All of them. It's just a party. It's a party album. That's not the last one.
I was freestyling too much. Let me see if I get a little something.
I actually talked to SOG last night, and we're gonna be working on a cumbia album too. We're doing because SOG produced like half of that album too. The one that I just dropped, he produced like half of it. The other half, it was a D-Craze, BZ Crank Up the Beat. In other words, I have a producer from Mexico that did the Katrina beat too. Nice. So
you have four producers.
Yes.
Four producers. Uh-huh.
So it's just, and I already got another album, like I was, the rap album. It's there, but it's different. Even the rap is different.
Mm.
It ain't.
So what are you going to do with that one?
Put it out. I'm going to put it out. But I'm trying to focus a little more on this. On this album right now.
It's doing good.
Yeah, this album
the number wise is just doing good.
Yeah, it's...
How many videos you have for it?
Right now, I only have one, but my goal is to pretty much create a video for each song that I got.
It's going to take a minute, though.
Yeah, it is. But yeah. I got Aldo. We're going to be working on a couple of other videos with him. There's another guy, Marcos, that has been wanting to work with me. He's doing some good work. I like his work. So I'm trying to work with them too. And I'm trying to work with people that don't have the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Like there's already a lot of videographers that are well made, but there's a lot of them too that have talent. And a lot of them, they don't have the right music behind them for other people to see.
Gotcha.
Their talent.
I see.
So if I see that they got talent and there's something, I'm willing to take a risk and work with them. Like, hey, let's use my platform to see what you can do with it.
That's dope.
So I try to do that a lot.
So you're gonna try to do how many tracks was it?
It's 13.
So you're gonna try to do 13 videos?
Dang. Yeah.
That should have been on the works already, bro. You should have had a couple ready to go.
It's already two of them, La Katrina and Cumbia. They're going to be getting shot pretty quick because those are the next ones that I'm going to be pushing. La Cama, I won't be able to shoot it until December.
The Cumbia, knew it was different because you spelled it with a K. And then your delivery on the Spanish was, it was different. You can hear the sound was different.
I wanted to go more with that... the DSR type of sound.
It did sound like...
More of that big tuck type of flow, like with some cumbia. That's what I wanted to create.
Even
with
what you were saying, like telling him a little about you.
That's my intro. Yeah. That's I'm letting people know who I am with that song. Them verses were just, it's me, what I'm trying to do. Yeah, that's me. And that's why that song, it was just, I felt it a lot. It's just one of those two where like, this is me. I'm giving you the cumbia vibes, but it's also a rap vibe with it. Yeah. It's not just your typical like delivery. It's more on the, I'm finna let you know.
Yeah.
This is
and
me. Did.
You can hear, you can feel the attitude on the track.
Yeah.
You can hear it. And that's dope. All right, what shows you got coming up? Because you actually got some shows lined up ready. We're going to probably drop this episode in 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But I think we'll still be able to cover the events you got going on. So what you got going on?
Ooh, we got a lot.
You got one with La Catrina, don't you?
Yes. October 30th. I actually just got booked on this show 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
It's like a big blessing. They're having Los Combes.
Ninel Conde.
Ninel Conde, she's going to be coming down. And
Químicos del...
Químicos de Cumbia, I think.
No, I know them, man.
I forget his name. But all them Cumbia groups right there that are going to be there, man, those, I follow them.
Yeah.
Because I love Cumbia. I like that stuff. So... just for me to be on stage with them, it's like, bro, like that's like something big for me. That like we're having in El Conde, that's like a big Mexican artist.
It is.
She is a telenovelas big... and all that stuff. What do they call it? El Bombón Asesino.
El Bombón Asesino.
So it's just like this is probably my biggest show. They're closing down the whole. Well, not the whole, like, 3 blocks from Jefferson Street where they cruise.
Yeah.
They're shutting it down, and we're having a big stage.
I'm looking at the IG real quick. So, Ninel Conde, Los Combers.
Yes.
Going to be there as well. They have Morros, Los Morros.
Los Morros.
Also going to be performing. We have, man, it's blurry. I can't see. I mean, why can't I see their name? Anyways, Louis the Great, I see you. Mm. I know them cats. I know Mauricio.
Mauricio.
He's also going to be performing.
Great, great performer.
And then
man.
We have Payasos, Totti, and Andy. And
we're having Luchadores.
Danza Azteca and Luchadores.
We're having Luchadores.
And that's
going to
be happening on October 30th.
Yes.
2022 from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what other show you have going on?
We have Four Corners Brewery. The Real Street Jam. It's a BMX, skateboarding, breakdancing, dance battles, graffiti battles. And there's going to be a pop-up show with the vintage clothing, people selling art, like anything. A couple of groups performing too, hip-hop groups performing. So we're having that one at the Four Corners Brewery.
And what day is that?
It's October 22nd.
October 22nd.
Yes.
And then the one that you were doing with...
and we're doing on Katrina. The same day, on October 22nd, we're doing Katrina, Mexico en tu piel with... it's going to be in West Dallas. That's going to be with... let me see... because I got so many things right now that are...
I know, dude, you have a lot.
And everything just came up with, just out of nowhere, bro. Like, it started just piling up crazy. It was just, like, everything is coming in pretty quick. I got a Herradura Tequila. I'm going to be working with them right now. They want to sponsor me and a lot of the shows that we're going to do. We're doing the Herradura Barrel show too, art show and concert. It's on the talks. That might be coming up in October or November.
A different show?
Yeah, that's going to be another different show that we're doing. And there's another one at the AT&T Plaza. That we're going to be doing. We're almost closing up on that one too through Real Street Jams. But the one on, it's called a Katrina Fest. It's on October 22nd from 6 to 10 p.m. on Frida's Tacolandia over there in West Dallas. Okay. That's another show that I'm going to be doing. I'm performing the Katrina song and the Cumbia song right there too.
Nice.
So for the one in at Jefferson, I think I'm going to be opening the show with the ceremonia, like going behind the matachines and all that stuff. That's so dope. That might be what's in the plans for that. We don't know yet. We're still planning on that one. Yeah. But
the other group that is going to be with the Ninel Conde one is Sol de la Cumbia. I don't know why.
Sol de la Cumbia. There you go.
They're the homies.
Yeah, Sol de la Cumbia. Man, great, great.
They're young, but they've been busy for years now.
Man, they've been at it, bro. Like, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. I follow them. Like, I follow them. I'm like, man, I like their, like, yeah, to me, I like
it for years. We had them on one an event that I put together years ago, and they've been jamming ever since. They get booked every week.
Yeah.
And be going out of state and different things like that.
And that's just like, man, they're like, they got, that's what I mean, bro. Like, everybody that's going to be on that stage, they got some hits. They got some, they know what they're doing. So that's why, like, to me, I better come with it.
Yeah.
Right. Even though I've been doing it for a minute, I better come with it because that's a big lineup.
Yeah. Oh, no, you know to be putting you be put a show. I see you perform. I was your hype man before, so I know what you do.
So it's
all
just right.
We're running short out of time, brother. So real quick before I let you go, what is all your social media? Where can people reach you at?
Louis the Great on Instagram. Louis the Great on Facebook. Same thing, LUITHEGREAT. Louis the Great, just Instagram and Facebook. That's really what I manage the most. Yeah. I got a Twitter, but I don't use it.
Nobody uses Twitter.
Yeah, my TikTok, I don't use it. I'm still trying to learn how to do it, so I'm not gonna try to just get all.
We use it.
Up.
Get at us on TikTok, Glow Atlanta Factor. I'm just putting videos for some of these clips right here.
I need to put some of those, so I need to get it done. So
hey, the sounds, bro, you need to get it in there because you don't ever know. Some people pick up the sound and
I think
it's gone.
There's a few of them that I wrote, especially just thinking of TikTok. Like,
so whenever you did distributor, whenever they distributed, they put that option to send it to Instagram, IG, and TikTok because they have that option.
Yeah, they have that option.
Whenever I post some of the videos in the clip, I add some of your sounds in there.
And that's what I started doing. Yeah. I think that's what helped me out a lot too with the numbers this time. I've been doing a lot of reels and a lot of storylines.
Yeah.
And I tag my songs from this new album.
Yeah.
And people share it, reshare it. I start noticing followers, the numbers changing differently.
It works.
And it works a lot. It works a lot.
All right. And one other question. If there was a lesson that you learned in the music business or in the business in general that you're done, that you can tell your younger self that somebody else can learn something from, what would that be?
Focus on your sound, man. Your sound. Don't rush to put a record out. That's a big problem that I think this city's got. They go to the studio, they record it. A lot of them, they be drunk, smoking or something. You hear all that stuff on the mic. The mic picks it up. The mixing and mastering. 2022, man. Pay somebody. Pay $50, $120. It's worth it. Because at the end, if you're trying to give somebody your sound, it doesn't matter how it looks. At the end of the day, it's that sound. If you catch the right people's ear with the sound, that's all you need at the end. If you got talent and you got the sound mixing master well, that's going to take you a long way because to whoever you're giving it your music, they're going to know you're taking yourself serious.
Yeah.
If you give somebody a record
it's
that's...
like your business card.
Yeah,
like
that's you.
Yeah, that's you.
If you don't take pride or time on getting something ready for the person that you want them to play you, why are they gonna play you?
That's true. And then there's not gonna be anything memorable out of it. They might remember that it sounded like doo-doo.
Yeah. So yeah. I've had those. I've gone to DJs. I did it.
Yeah.
I learned from that.
Of course.
That's the reason why I'm telling you.
They don't feel good hearing
oh,
it.
Oh, no, he don't.
But they know, but you're telling like, you because they know.
Yeah.
Because all they do is play records.
That's their job.
Yeah.
That's their job. That's what they do. That's why there's sometimes like, oh, this DJs ain't playing my stuff. Are you making records that they're going to play?
Are you making mainstream records?
Are you making
your records compared to Drake or any other one?
Or sound any other sound?
Pretty close or similar to them. Like, not what they're saying, but the sound.
The sound. The quality.
Like, the smoothness. How everything pops. How the, mm-hmm. the 808s and everything is just, like, nice and smooth. But if it's not, then
if
you're not there.
You're not there.
Keep at it. Find somebody that will put you and... Making music is not for people that don't have any money. You have to put your money aside. You have to hustle. Hopefully you do it the legal way and make your money aside too, because this has to be literally what you put your money to invest in yourself to have a great sound, because it matters.
But the sound matters a lot. Sound, at the end of the day, if you got the right sound and the right DJ plays it and he sees the people at the club dancing, that's all you need.
Yeah, he's going to keep playing.
That's all you need.
All right, brother. So your passion as far as for the arts and just being an artist and creating different things, whether it's with the airbrush, whether it's murals, whether you're painting, whether you're now that you're making different music as far as changing the sound and the fact that without a doubt it reaches worldwide audience nowadays is just pretty obvious. There's no doubt that Louis... The great, you are a global Latin factor, sir.
Thank you very much
for being here. One last question before I let you go. If somebody was to Google you or search you many years from now, what do you hope for them to find of you?
They're going to find a lot of stuff because I ain't done yet. I'm just barely getting started.
Anything particular you want them to find or just find everything?
Everything. Everything, because I know how to do a lot of things and I'm doing well. And if other kids see it, it can help them, like, say, like, man, this guy right here didn't know how to speak English.
Yep.
And now he's out here, like, all over. He did the move that I made, the first double air flare. They're doing it in the gymnastics.
Like, didn't B-Boy in the Olympics?
Yeah,
now?
He reached the Olympics now.
Right?
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
dope.
So that's why it was easier for them to put in the Olympics. Because they were going to credit the name of the air flare with the guy that did it in 2009 in the Olympics. Hamilton, I think.
So who was the first two flare?
The first person that did the double air flare, me. It's on video.
In Dallas or all over the world?
Actually, my clip is the only clip from all over the world.
You might have an argument.
It's Red Bull was trying to get into that. They had a guy. My footage is the only footage right now. Like so many years after, they finally gave me my credit on a book. In the internet, the OBS group, they gave me my credit. It still hasn't made it to the Gymnastics World Association. That's what I'm trying to do. That's one thing that I want, because it's got to come back to Dallas.
That's true.
We're
That's
here.
That is dope.
Imagínate un latino es un inmigrante.
Yeah.
Llegar hasta acá and do all those things.
That's dope, bro. I hope they do put it in there, because if there's no other footage, there's no other evidence of that anybody did it, then yeah. And hopefully that's part of the thing that they found when they Google you.
Yeah.
All right. Appreciate you being here, bro. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
This was another episode of the Global Latin Factor Podcast. Remember, we are just like you. We are the spice in this melting pot. That it is the world. Till next time. Thank you very much for checking out this episode of the Global Latin Factor Podcast. If you are enjoying the content and the channel, go ahead and subscribe. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 subscribers so we can bring you more episodes, more channel. Go like, go subscribe, go write a comment. We appreciate it very much. Thank you. Like
pero but in fact it's a flamingo. Coming to Havana and we're from Puerto Rico. On a pirate ship, you don't know where do we go. The birds of the jungle chasing fortune and...